One Pixel Jump for September 4th, 2010. We're back, finally, from the depths of internet hell. We have returned to bring you news that isn't really news because it already happened.
You know what that news is? It's Azumanga Daioh!
That's right. It's Azumanga Daioh, a show that is ingrained into my understanding of what anime is.
It's pretty much the most awesome anime ever. Aside from all the other awesome anime.
Oh, it's up there. Azumanga Daioh is the first thing that I ever watched that was... that can be described as comedy anime that I actually laughed at. Because, I mean, you know, what do you think of when somebody describes a comedy anime to you?
Pretty much one that doesn't try too hard to be funny. I mean, good comedy anime that makes you laugh doesn't make all that much sense. And it shouldn't.
Yeah, mostly because anime jokes that are intended to be jokes are really just sort of uncomfortable and stupid.
Cricket chirps.
Yeah, at least that's what it would be for us. It's nice because Azumanga Daioh has almost everything set up for it to be one of those shows. It is a comedy about high school girls that takes place specifically in a high school. It's the worst formula ever, but it really works.
It was originally part of, was it a Shonen magazine?
Yeah, Azumanga Daioh was originally published in, I guess, Monthly Dragon magazine, and the idea was the people who read Monthly Dragon magazine are primarily teenage, high school age boys, and it's this idea that get a quick laugh at the girls. Girls are really weird. That's what we want to give you to look at. But it really works because Azumanga Daioh is actually funny and actually kind of charming.
It doesn't try too hard with... there's a number of different stereotypes you see in these characters, but they're not overbearing stereotypes. They're just funny.
They're also... Well, I mean, I guess it's sort of half and half, because they're kind of unique. I don't know. There's always been the idiot Osakan stereotype for anime characters, but this is the first time that I would say that it's been done where the person is just on a whole other plane of thought.
Yep. Cloud Cuckoo Landers.
Yeah, well, that's Osaka in one term. That's the best thing about her, though. She's so out of touch with reality, but still somehow aware of it. It's almost like she's aware of reality, but doesn't care. It's hard to describe.
She kind of gets these moments of sudden brilliance and gets all this respect from the characters. And most of the time when you have this stupid character like that, you wouldn't see those moments of brilliance.
Well, it's more like Osaka's moments of brilliance are just kind of cool. When you have the character who's a super badass but doesn't realize it, I'm not going to say that that's bad on principle, but it's very, very overdone. And Osaka's kind of like that. It's mostly just that when she's cool, it's just cool. It's not some sort of deus ex machina for the show, which would be due to the fact that the show has a minimal plot.
I mean, you've got a few characters that have Mary Sue elements to them, but that's not overbearing either. It doesn't make them less fun to watch, look at.
Well, that's because there isn't really a Mary Sue character straight up. The closest thing would be Chiyo, because she's a 10-year-old high school student who's a super genius, is incredibly rich.
Is also incredibly kind, she gets along really well with her classmates, especially considering their age difference.
She's very charming. There isn't nobody in the entire world could say a negative thing against her, and anything negative they said against her would just reflect poorly on the person saying it. But at the same time, she's counterbalanced by her faults. Chiyo has a little bit of an ego. It's kind of refreshing to actually see her take pride and be bothered when people talk down to her in some way.
That's upperclassman Chiyo to you! She talks down this guy who's going into 10th grade or whatever. He's fresh into high school. I guess he'd
would
be like 15, 16.
Year.
Yeah.
Yeah, he would be this, I guess, 15-year-old.
Yeah,
he'd be about 15, and Chiyo would be about 13 at this point. She's like,
she'd be like 11.
What?
She'd be like 11.
No, she was a senior.
She would have been like a second year, though.
I thought she... Anyway. No, she was definitely in her third year of high school.
All right.
So she would have been 12 or 13.
So she's talking down this guy.
Which is which is pretty well done, actually.
What did she say?
She's just like, hey, listen, lowerclassmen, you better address me as Senior Mihama. And I love the reaction of the guy, because when she's giving this tirade, he's just like... blank stare, and then when she walks off in a proud huff, he's like, is there a little kid here? What?
I like how her pigtails go up to show how conceited she feels and how incredibly important she feels.
Well, that's the thing about Chiyo's pigtails. They're one of the show's running gags where they almost seem to have a life of their own or are not natural hair in some way, because when she's walking in that scene, I'm pretty sure they bounce up and down as though they're on some sort of hinge. We're going all over the place, and that's probably a good way to talk about Azumanga Daioh, because there's not a whole lot of continuity between this stuff happens in first year, this stuff happens in second year, this stuff happens at the end of the show. And I feel like maybe we should give a much bigger outline of it to underline these little anecdotes, because the only way we can talk about Azumanga Daioh is, remember that time when this happened?
Yep.
Azumanga Daioh is the story of... how many girls is it? I can remember them.
You've got Chiyo. You've got Kagura.
Chiyo, the super genius who got into high school at 10 years old. And not even just any high school. If you know how high school works in Japan, where there are lots of entrance exams, and you actually have to put in forth a lot of effort to get into a government-sanctioned high school, or whatever you want to call it. So getting into high school at 10 years old is a huge freaking deal.
Yep. So you got Chiyo, the wise girl, who's also rich and also happy and friendly. You got Asaka, the Claude Cuckoolander.
Asaka is the person who exists in her own little world. I'm sure that somebody out there, I'm sure many times, have been like, Asaka has ADD or ADHD or ADHD, DHDH.
She has Osaka-ism.
Yeah, that's the best way to put it. Asaka is her own disorder. And that's sort of where her unique charm comes in, because it's interesting to watch her just to figure out how her mind works.
Yep. So you got Chiyo, you have Asaka, and those two actually get along really well, considering how different they are. They get along well because they're part of the Flat Chest Club.
We'll get to the boob thing in a minute.
So then you have Yomi, who's a relatively normal person.
Yomi would be the closest the series has to a completely normal-minded, fully balanced person. Nothing saying against anybody else. I'm just, you know, Yomi is the most normal person.
The series needs a straight man. Someone to kind of keep in mind, you know, that all these other people are insane.
The kind of person to walk around with all of the other characters and go, "Bwah," when something weird happens.
Yep. And then there's your friend she's known forever, who's absolutely crazy, Tomo.
Tomo Takino, my favorite character. Tomo is the most entertaining character to watch because she is what is known as a Genki girl. She's incredibly energetic, she's really hyper, she's happy, up in your face all the time, and
never studies.
Well, I don't know if that's necessarily a quality of the Genki girl, but she also is a total she's not really an idiot. She's just really, really lazy.
Very out there, but not quite in an Osaka way?
Right, she's out... yeah. Well, Tomo can only accomplish good things if it will piss someone off in the process.
Not very respectful, either. I mean, it's fair, we'll get to their teachers in a second.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they don't deserve respect.
Yeah. There's Sakaki.
Sakaki, my favorite character.
I like Sakaki well enough, although she's the... I don't know even how
she's
to describe...
She's a shrinking violet. She's like...
Which is bizarre considering how she is.
I mean, she's tall, she's athletic, she's determined at a lot of points. But then everyone wants her to join their club because she's so awesome. She has a little bit of Mary Sue going for her there, but... And she's also kind of an average student, so it's not like she's a dumb jock or something. But, like, I mean, she has all this going for her, but then she kind of gives off this impression of being kind of mean. Even though she's not. She loves cute things. Cute things just don't like her back.
It's because... Which is where Sakaki's entire personality comes from. She's tall, beautiful, athletic. She gets not the world's greatest grades, but decent grades. So she comes off as very intimidating. She... In everyone else's mind, Sakaki is the kind of person who would lead a bike gang, have an open boys school jacket with Sarashi around her chest, holding a stick with those holy charms tied to it, a headband around, getting ready to go beat up some jackasses.
To be fair, at one point she actually dresses like a tough guy, but
well, that yeah, was
she just always gives off that impression.
Yeah, she always looks like that, which is much to her dismay, because she's always wanted to be cute.
She envies Chiyo, and Chiyo envies her.
Yeah, it's a pretty normal thing. You find out much later that Sakaki's envy is due to her, the fact that she has always been the big, tough-looking kid, and so she's always wanted to be surrounded by cuteness, because she's never had it herself. Then there are... Later on in the second year, they're joined by Kagura, who is sort of this almost parallel to Tomo. It's hard to call. She's pretty much what Tomo would be if Tomo had Sakaki's physique.
And she's pretty competitive, too. Always trying to get Sakaki to compete against her in things. They always race...
Yeah, her major relationships are her personality is defined almost entirely by her relationships with Tomo and Sakaki, because she is very athletic and she wants to prove herself to be the best athlete in the whole school, and consequently Sakaki is this hurdle for her. But Tomo also considers Sakaki something of a rival, because Tomo is, I'm not going to say ashamed, but wishes she had Sakaki's great figure rather than her sort of flat-chested Japanese woman figure. It's weird to talk about that sort of thing, but it's true.
It's addressed a lot.
It doesn't come up as often as it seems, as it may sound like it does, but it comes up from time to time. The biggest time it comes up is during the school physical things, where apparently all of the girls have to get their measurements taken.
Yep.
But apparently, like during this, Tomo bursts out of the room after her physical is like, my buzz grew 3 whole centimeters, but there's still Miss Sakaki to beat. I gotta work hard. And Sakaki's shrinking in the corner crying. It's horrible.
Then occasionally people notice something cute about Sakaki, like her underwear or her towel, and then somehow she always manages to sweep it under the rug.
Well, it's because Sakaki is sort of... She really wants to have this cutesy demeanor about her like Chiyo does, but at the same time, it's almost as... I always get the feeling that Sakaki was raised in an extremely proper household, which
yeah,
makes me...
Yeah, very nicely and politely.
She is extremely polite, and you notice once that Sakaki actually walks through the same neighborhood with Chiyo and Mr. Tadakichi, almost coincidentally. At least coincidentally once or twice, and then she starts doing it on purpose to hang out with the dog because the dog won't bite her. So it's possible that Sakaki's family is also very well off, and it gives me this impression that Sakaki has been almost trained since childhood to be very prim and very proper, and that makes me wonder if her hiding being cutesy like having the cutesy underwear or the towel with a little cat on it, if that's just part of her upbringing. Like, she has to maintain this very respectful and downplayed demeanor in order to look presentable at all times.
Well, I mean, there's that, but she indulges in all these cute things in secret, but she also has a plain-as-day cat bedspread that you see in some of the episodes where she's asleep.
Maybe it's considered okay because she's at home there? I don't know.
No, you never see these parents.
Yeah, there are no adults in the Asmongadao universe other than a drunkard, a semi-responsible person who's worse when she's drunk, and a pervert.
Yeah, we got the three teachers, but aside from that, it's like Peanuts in high school.
Yeah, more or less. Although, that's okay, because if there were more adult characters, there'd be less time for Yukari. And Yukari's, like, my favorite character. Other than, it's a close race between Tomo and Yukari.
They're a lot alike.
Oh, but of course.
But Yukari's the homeroom teacher. She teaches English, which would be a foreign language in Japan. So she comes off as kind of, you know, important, kind of smart, but she's kind of crazy.
Well, that's because Yukari divorced from teaching English or in a situation where she would be able to speak it is just Tomo, but older.
Then, kind of the person who plays the straight man to Yukari is who she calls Niamo. What's her real
name? Minamo Kurosawa.
Minamo Kurosawa, the PE teacher. So, usually she's the one who's respectable, respectful. At one point, she even considers getting a nice office job, getting an arranged marriage, all these prim and proper things.
This amongst while she's carting Yukari around, while Yukari is either drunk or in the process of becoming drunk.
Somehow they always manage to make a bet during a sports festival, and Yukari gets really into it, and Minamo doesn't really care all that much.
Although she does still honor the bet, mostly because she knows that she can immediately get the money back by claiming that Yukari has borrowed that money and she's just taking it back now.
Yukari bums off of her a lot.
Yeah, well, that's sort of Yukari's thing. She still lives with her parents, after all.
Mm-hmm.
In the manga, there's actually a point where Niamo comes over to, because they're carpooling, and Niamo comes over, and she's like, "You're still not awake." It's like, an alarm clock can wake me up, but once it wakes me up, it's just this loud, annoying thing that I have to shut up. That's why I need you or my mommy to wake me up gently. And I'm like, that's adorable, but kind of bizarre.
Let's not even mention Yukari's driving ability versus Niamo's.
The Yukari mobile.
See this really horribly badly dented car?
It's a BMW, I think, actually. So it's not even like a crappy car. It's a good car.
It's not hers, is it?
No, it's her parents. You think Yukari could afford that car?
Yeah, right.
With all the binge drinking she does?
Well, to be fair, she bums off Minamo a lot, though.
Well, that's probably why she can't afford the car.
But, like, if Minamo's paying all of it,
then she could save up money. That's the reason she's bumming off of her. Hey, Niamo, I can't pay for beer because I have to repair the car again.
Niamo's responsible enough with money where she can always manage to afford more stuff than Yukari, though.
Yeah, which makes me wonder about their respective salaries. Well, no, that's not true, because Yukari claims that they get paid the same amount, which is a point of contention for Yukari, because Niamo gets to go to work at a pool, where Yukari has to be at work in a classroom.
And then she tries to trade out and teach PE.
Which translates to, I'm going to teach PE, which means I'm going to sit at the pool. I'm going for more fan service this year.
Yes. That brings up Kimura.
Kimura. I don't even know how the internet feels about Kimura. I don't actually hate him.
Kimura gives off this impression of being a slack-jawed pervert. But he's a classics teacher, and classics would be a pretty tough subject in Japan. I mean, it's basically Japanese, but it's ancient Japanese, so kids in Japan use pocket translators when they're trying to study classics, just like they would for English class.
Which is really interesting, because divorced from having to being directly interfacing with high school girls, Kimura is a very intelligent, upstanding family man citizen.
Yep, he sets a good example, prays for world peace, donates $100.
Yeah, he doesn't just pray for world peace. Yomi, who is next to him, prays for good grades and throws in, I think, a 500 yen coin. He prays for world peace and throws in a 10,000 yen note.
Yep.
And that's other than when he just gives people 100 yen notes for charity boxes.
And he has this really super sweet wife who's also a ditz.
It may be remiss of me to say this, but Kimura's wife is what's going to happen when Osaka gets older. Yeah, that's what I thought.
Let's move past that thought.
Beyond describing the characters, there's not really much to say about Azumanga Daioh other than just recanting jokes that happen in it. Which, essentially, pretty much when we talk about the rest of Azumanga Daioh, we're going to recant jokes that happen in it, and it is nothing by comparison to what happens in the series itself. So, do yourself a favor, pause the podcast, go watch a couple of episodes of Azumanga Daioh, and come back. The podcast isn't going to miss you. I will miss you, though. The first episode of Azumanga I ever watched was the New Year's Dream episode, which is a good thing because the New Year's Dream episode is so bizarre that it's what really got me into the series at all.
It's so random that it epitomizes the series, even if it's a completely crazy episode. It never really gets much mentioned again, other than a few gags that come up.
Yeah, I've actually heard that it's one of the episodes that doesn't work for people as well because it doesn't make any coherent sense. But I'm willing to let it go on that basis because it is so out there that I can't help but want to watch more of it to see what's going on.
Exactly.
The best episode as far as just standard humor goes is probably either Tomo's Dream, which is great, or Kaori's Dream. Tomo's Dream is Tomo's ultimate fantasy. She is the super popular, super beautiful, super smart, super athletic, ultra high school student girl. In the course of her dream, she gets to school on time, answers some of the hardest questions, gets a joke that I don't really get, the 100 within a 100.
She's so awesome, she can beat a perfect score.
Wins a beauty contest, specifically beating out Yomi, of all people.
They show a picture of Yomi crying in the little newspaper spin that shows that she won.
I know, which, I mean, it really gives you this picture into Tomo's psyche. It's not enough for me to win. Yomi has to suffer.
Yomi has to cry.
Yes. On top of that, which means that Yomi probably lost the beauty competition on the basis that she was fat.
Poor Yomi thinks she's going to diet. She doesn't.
Well, that's something that nobody seems to get with Azumanga Daioh that I actually kind of understand. Yomi has a definite respectable figure. She doesn't seem to be fat. She seems to be well proportioned for her height, but she's very sensitive about her weight, which I assume is just, you know, a normal high school girl thing. You just feel sensitive about your appearance. It's a high school student thing in general.
It's a self-consciousness thing.
Yeah, and it doesn't help that Tomo continually chides her over it.
Yep.
It's like, no, I need to stop eating so many sweet buns. You're right, you're so fat, and it just punches her.
Tomo gets away with a lot for her gankiness, and even in that dream, with all that awesome stuff going for her, she's still ganky.
Yeah, that's true.
The only way it's because it's in that dream.
Yeah, well, the best she gets for humility is she's like, oh no, it was nothing really, but, you know, with a snide smile, like, yeah, I'm awesome, worship me, you little bitch. Specifically saying that to Chiyo while hitting her, probably.
Nandeane.
I don't get that. it's an Osaka duo comedy thing. I'm not too well versed in that to understand it, so.
But Tomo just keeps hitting Yomi in that dream, and she just keeps saying, "Nandayonin, Nandayonin, Nandayonin." Why in the heck? Why in the heck?
I don't know if that is a joke in the same way to a Japanese audience as it is to me, because for an American audience, by which I mean myself, it's that how long is she going to keep gooing this? And she does it like 20 times.
Yeah.
It goes on for like a whole minute and a half.
Mm-hmm. So
there are so many other good episodes of Ozumanga to talk about. How about the hiccups incident?
Oh, gosh. All right, so Osaka got the hiccups. 3 hours.
I didn't even notice that time was passing during that, because they're always just at school.
Well, like, it started off at lunch, didn't it?
I suppose so, and I guess it does go to the end of the day.
Yeah, and she's in music class, and you just hear her hiccup and mess up playing the recorder?
Yeah, the... It's not really how it affects Tomo's day that's funny, but rather the cures for hiccups that they have to go through, which includes drinking water that is balanced on a pair of chopsticks and punching her in the stomach.
Sakaki has a lot of whimsical ideas for things that might work, like folk comedies.
Yeah, isn't it like boiling grass roots or something? Boil grass roots in chili powder and then have her drink it through her ear or something? One of those really... Something that doesn't sound like it would actually cure hiccups.
And then eventually, who gets the hiccups? Is it
Chiyo? Yeah, all of a sudden they just scare the... Chiyo's attempt to scare Osaka is great.
Be can't very scare afraid. Anybody.
Well, it's not even like she doesn't even try to go to jump in Osaka's face and go boo. She just goes, "Be very afraid, Miss Osaka. Please, for the love of God, be very afraid."
Oh, Chiyo, always polite.
Yeah, I know. No matter what happens to be going on, there's only one or two times where she's actually kind of what could be considered rude, and it's only when she's defending herself.
Yep. She kind of has to. She's short.
Please give it back.
Yes. She playfully accuses Sakaki of stealing her height, because Sakaki's so tall.
Yeah, though, the thing is, I think that Osaka's the one who insinuates that Sakaki's stealing the height, and Chiyo decides to actually play along with it, which is interesting, because it's one of the few times that Chiyo's able to pick up on that something is a joke.
Yep.
She's the sort of academic genius where she doesn't really get a lot of social jokes. Maybe I'm misremembering it, but she actually picks up on that Tomo is making fun of Sakaki for being so tall, and she decides to pick on her for it.
Sakaki's very self-conscious about her height. She's got to be 5'8", 5'9", which would be ridiculously tall for a Japanese woman.
In the series itself, they actually do point her out to be 172 centimeters, which I don't know exactly how that translates, but I know it's
5'8", 5'9".
Yeah. The funniest thing about that is the way they pointed out her exact height in the series is during, I think, the second or maybe even the third sports festival, during one of the episode intermissions, it goes, "Hi, I'm Kagura. The fact that I'm 158 centimeters tall has nothing to do with the sports fest."
It's interesting that you know how tall Sakaki and Kagura are, but you don't know their first names.
Maybe that's the reason those two were picked for it.
Hmm. Maybe so. I thought it might have to do with their athletic ability or something. Or the fact that Kagura sees them as being rivals.
I suppose. That makes a little bit more sense.
It's weird, but, like, I mean, some characters get a lot more detail than others.
Specific ways. You learn a whole lot more about Kagura's aspirations and her self-consciousness than you do from some of the other characters. I know you learn a lot. You actually learn the most about Sakaki and Chiyo than any other characters in the series. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, think about it. You don't really learn anything about Osaka's aspirations, and you definitely don't learn anything about her family. For the love of God, you barely even learn her actual name.
Yep. In fact, there's a point where she's trying to figure out which class she's in.
That's one of my favorite jokes, where she's afraid she didn't get into her old homeroom with Yukari, but her name is listed on the class register as Osaka.
Her real name is more like Ayumu Kasuga, so she's not expecting to see Osaka written. But the first day she steps into the classroom, I think Toma or someone is like, "Hey, everyone, we're going to call her Osaka from now on." And then they're just like, "Okay." And she's like, "Well, I guess I'm Osaka now."
Well, she seems somewhat bothered by it, but then she just rolls with it 5 minutes later.
Yep.
Later on, I think she even stops responding to her actual name. Doesn't that happen during the graduation ceremony where she's called up for... I don't remember. I want to think that there's some point where she's called up to get something and then she doesn't respond to her actual name being called.
Maybe her report card?
It's probably a report card, although I would think that a diploma would work for it as well.
I just remember her during their graduation ceremony, just kind of sitting there with the box of tissues, having hay fever.
I remember that because it interrupts the, the principal's comments about, she's giving the big, "You're graduating" speech, and every now and then just, "Hecha."
Hecha. The most pathetic sounding sneeze ever. Everyone just kind of turns around, and they're like, "What?"
It doesn't even sound like a sneeze. It sounds like she's doing it on purpose.
Yep.
But I love that about Osaka. That ridiculous... Especially because Kagura and her have this accidental sneezing competition, because Kagura sneezes like a real person, goes, "Achoo!" But... And Osaka's like, "Wow, that was a really impressive sneeze. I could never sneeze like that." And Kagura's like, "What?" And then... there's all of a sudden, "Hecho. Wow, that sneeze was also really impressive. I don't really get it."
Doesn't she, laugh at her, though?
You're right. She's like, "That was the worst sneeze ever. How could you even try to sneeze like that?" That was pretty good.
Yes.
There's so much in Azumanga Daioh. It's hard to even try to really talk about it without just saying, "Hey, remember that time when Tomo beat Yomi in the face with a pillow?" That never happens, I don't think.
I know, but it's a fun mental image.
I mean, I can imagine it happening. We didn't even talk about Niyamo's drunken Birds and the Bees lecture.
Oh, man. That was kind of like something that got built up. So, a lot of Azumanga's storytelling structure was recurring, especially with the anime. They'll go from having, sports festival first year, culture festival first year, beach episode first year. They have all these first year episodes, and then it cycles back through with the second year episodes. So
which
for this first year beach episode, they'll go to Chio's beach house, and then they want to find out more about the birds and the bees, so they want a lecture, and then...
It isn't until the third year that they get the lecture, though.
They try, though. They try before they get it.
Yeah, I remember Tomo specifically asked, "So, Niyamo, do you know any pervy stuff?" When she repeats the question,
make it work.
Well, the reason that they get her drunk is Niyamo actually gets herself drunk. She's like, "If Yukari drinks all of that sake, there's going to be a mountain of trouble. I must take it upon myself to drink all of this." So she steals the bottle, drinks the entire thing, and you know how a real sake bottle looks, and it's a foot long, not including the mouth. And the best thing about it that comes out of it, other than the speech and the idyllic imagery, is that the first thing that comes out of anybody's mouth is Tomo says, "Hey, Niyamo, tell us about adults' relationships. Are they all pervy and stuff?" And Niyamo goes, "Yeah, they're real pervy." Oh, it's fantastic.
Azumanga does a good job with character contrast. You never see that one-dimensional character. I mean, Kimura has his saintly side, and then he has his more unsavory side of lusting after high school girls and their boobs. And then you got Niyamo, who usually looks responsible, but in this case starts to get a little bit crazy.
Yeah, there are no one-dimensional characters. Yomi seems like the confident, "I have it all together" girl, but she is secretly very self-conscious about her appearance, and later on comes the conflict where she's the last one to get accepted into a college.
Yep.
Chio seems to be this Mary Sue. She's rich, she's brilliant, she has the whole world open to her, but she is unsettled by the fact that because she's young, she can't really be like a real high school girl. And she also has this lingering doubt that she kind of wishes she had stayed a grade school student because she feels like she left that part of her childhood behind.
You see Sakaki, a couple of her friends. She gets kind of wistful.
Miniature Niyamo and Yukari.
Yep.
Yeah, Kyohiko Azuma has a bit of the only one face problem where everyone looks almost exactly the same. There's only three total faces. There's the Chiyo face, there's the Sakaki face, and Kimura.
Yeah, Kimura gets his own face because no one else wants it.
Well, his wife does.
Well, but she doesn't get the face.
Yeah, he probably looks normal around her. I wonder what he looks like without his glasses on.
Does she even open her eyes?
I want to think she does. I want to think she has the same kind of eyes that everyone else does.
Right, but that's kind of rare. Usually her eyes seem to be all closed because she looks all, you know, in a funk and kind of out of it.
Maybe just it's symbolism.
Happy. Maybe so?
Maybe it's symbolic to that she has her eyes closed to the real situation about her husband.
Love is blind!
Maybe that's it. We could sit here and just talk about Azumanga Daioh jokes all day long, but the best thing to do is just find some episodes, watch them yourself. If you want my suggestion, you can really start anywhere to accomplish anything, because people's backstories are revealed piecemeal, and you can pretty much get everybody's personalities at the drop of a hat.
You're not going to miss too much aside from understanding names by going to a later episode. I start with episode one, just because that's where they show who's who.
Yeah, which is not a bad place to start, but if you're concerned about, you know, it's not too big a concern. If you start in the middle, it's not a big deal. The latest I would consider starting would maybe be the episode where Osaka shows up, which, granted, is episode two, so don't listen to me. Just go wherever you want.
I mean, the character differences physically are subtle, but they're there. It's helpful to start with episode one. But if you don't, it's okay. I mean, it used to be like, well, start off as Four-Kun, where it would be a four-panel comic. It wasn't even manga in the traditional sense, so really there's not a whole lot of character development.
Hmm. Yeah, but, I mean, character development, in a sense, is rather than there are characters that change over time, you get to know new things about them as the show goes on. Mm-hmm. But watch it. There's no substitute for actually watching the series.
Yeah, just watch it. Why are you listening to us? Go watch.
Yeah, we told you to go in the middle of the podcast. Seriously, dude. With that, I think we should close it off. And there's only one thing we could possibly say to sync up a podcast about Azumanga Daioh.
What can we say to sync up the podcast of Azumanga Daioh?
Come on. Do you even have to ask?
Nandanen?
Of course. One, two, three.
Nandanen!
Nandanen!
Alright, that didn't sync up.
What?
Alright, set that in.